The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome to The Big Show. Welcome to The Big Lead. It's another busy news afternoon, and I am here to navigate these choppy waters with you. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
As you know, I believe much of government, particularly locally, that much of government is designed to just rip off the taxpayers. And I know that that's a horribly cynical viewpoint, but in all my years of making being a government watchdog the primary mission of my show, I have certainly presented enough information and have given you all the reasons that I've arrived at that conclusion. And particularly here in our state, where we see Sound Transit, $100 billion will be spent on that when all is said and done, to do nothing to alleviate gridlock in our region. Nothing. By their own environmental impact statement, it'll do nothing to alleviate gridlock, and we're spending $100 billion. And what's happened is, and this was from the very get-go, this is why I was the earliest and most vocal critic of Sound Transit when it was being proposed back in 1995. It was one of my first ever crusades on the air because I had information and sources that have proven to be 100% accurate that we had government officials who knew it was going to do nothing for the region's gridlock, but they also knew that it was a way to get the $100 billion from us to them. And so who wanted this money? Well, it was the labor unions, the contractors, the real estate developers who were tipped off about what route the lines would take so they could acquire real estate and make tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. It was about politically connected insiders who were able to get amazingly wealthy by screwing over and ripping off the taxpayers. So that's what Sound Transit's about. I've talked about this at the national level. I mentioned this yesterday. Look at the net worth of United States senators who make, I don't know what they make, $200,000, $300,000 a year. And many of them are worth $25 million, $50 million, $100 million. How do you think that happens? How do you think public servants amass unfathomable wealth on what is a good, but not the kind of salary that can get you $50 million in investments? It's because they are part of this tremendous ripoff of the taxpayers. And this happens all the time. So that's why I've been spotlighting the last week this great series. And I have a very important update in my communications with the governor's office just in the last few minutes here. But Chris Ingalls at King 5, he did an absolutely fantastic story last week, and he had another follow-up 2 nights ago about this low-income housing condo project. There's a nonprofit called ARCH, a Regional Coalition for Housing, and their mission is to get low-income people, working-class people, into the housing market for the first time. So the way they do that is they work with these condo developers, and they say, hey, if you set aside some low-income condos, we will give you money. We will subsidize. Well, taxpayers will give you money. So cities on the east side of King County, Bellevue and Eastward, the taxpayers have spent $50 million with this group ARCH, supposedly so poor and working class people could buy affordable condos. But the story Chris had 2 nights ago, and the requirement is it must be your primary residence. You can't buy it and then rent it out or use it as an investment because you got it for under market value. It's intended for you, if you can't afford to get into the real estate market, to be able to get a place of your own. The intention is good. The project stinks to high heaven because of government's involvement in this. So two nights ago, Chris had the story about a woman, Sandy Yee, a real estate agent. According to the neighbors in this building, she has never lived in her condo. And they have things from Craigslist advertising renting out the condo. And so that's in violation of not just the spirit, but the letter of the contract that they all signed that said that it must be your primary residence and it's meant for people below a certain income threshold. But somehow connected people were able to get these condos and then they rent them out. And so why did the taxpayers have to contribute $50 million? But the one that was even more disturbing than that was one of the condo buyers in this building is an Olympia power couple, the Altmans. He is Jay Inslee's chief education policy advisor. She, Nona Snell Altman, she is the clerk for the Democrat-controlled State House of Representatives, and she has, in years past, worked on affording housing rules and regulations in our state. So she knows the ins and outs of this. Now, how did they qualify for a low-income condo? They make $280,000 a year between them. They have a home 20 minutes from the state capitol, a waterfront home in the Olympia area. And yet somehow this Jay Inslee connected power couple was able to get this condo for below market value that the neighbors say they don't live in, even though you have to sign a contract that say it'll be your primary residence. And so when I had Chris Ingalls, when he first confronted Nona Snell Altman, she was leaving her office at the state capitol, and Chris Ingalls went up to her, like a great reporter does, to try to ask questions on behalf of, you know, his viewers and we, the taxpayers. He wanted to know, how does this politically connected, you know, Inslee staffer and Democrat House clerk, how did they get a low-income condo that the neighbors say they're not living in?
Hi, Ms. Altman. We're from the King 5 Investigators. How is it that you and your husband qualify for your condo at the McKee?
I'm sorry, I'm a little caught off guard by this.
Okay.
And I'm also on my way somewhere.
And then she told him she was tired, too.
I just got back from a trip. I'm very tired. I'm supposed to go meet my mother right now, so I need to go.
Okay. But can I ask you, you own a house in Thurston County.
Yes.
How is the Bellevue condo, which is a second home, how would that qualify as an affordable housing unit?
I need to give this some thought. I'm not really sure.
Okay, and then she gave a classic answer right before she closed her car door on Chris.
Like I said, I'm really caught off guard. I need to think about this.
But, I mean, you've lived there for quite some time, and obviously that's an affordable housing unit that is supposed to go to qualified families. Do you qualify for that?
Well, we have it, so like I said, I can talk to you about this later, maybe.
Do you qualify for it? Well, we have it. That's not an answer. Because if you got it by scamming the taxpayers, then that should be a problem. And so the question that I was asking when Chris first shared his story with us a week ago, the question I asked is Jay Inslee going to fire his chief education policy advisor if he was part of a ripoff of the taxpayers? Are the Democrats in the House going to fire their clerk if she was involved in a ripoff of the taxpayers when she was one of the people who was writing affordable housing policy for the state? So I had Chris Ingalls back on because he updated another, I told you, the real estate agent who got one of these condos and doesn't live there, according to the neighbors. And at the end of my interview with Chris yesterday, and then this will lead to my communication with the governor's office today. At the end of my interview with Chris Ingalls, he told me something shocking. The question I asked after your story last week, is Jay Inslee going to keep as his chief education policy advisor a guy who, it looks to me, is ripping off the taxpayers? Is the House going to keep as their chief clerk a woman who looks to be ripping off the taxpayers? Have you heard anything more? Because at first, I know the governor's office was attacking you for your reporting of that story. Have you heard anything more from the governor and any consequences for them?
Well, several days in, they sort of upped the game. You know, we were getting governor's communication staff telling us that we were off base and our story was unfair. And then it was the chief of staff, David Postman, from the governor's office, who sent us an email yesterday criticizing our story, our method, our fairness, our journalism. They particularly don't like the way that I approached Nona Snell Altman outside the Capitol building where she works. So they are very defensive, and surprisingly so, I would say, given that it seems that this story has raised a lot of questions that the public should be asking about this program, given all the things we've shown over the past few days.
Well, that's bizarre to me, Chris. I mean, David Postman was a newspaper guy, a Seattle Times guy, and he's criticizing a journalist for asking a government employee about what appears to be a ripoff of taxpayers. I mean, that's really disturbing to me, Chris. If the governor's office is telling you that you shouldn't have been asking those questions.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I really do. I mean, the quote that stands out to me from David Postman is, "I do not understand your coverage of this issue." That seems broader than just, leave the Altmans alone or that kind of thing. You know, that we're asking the wrong questions about this program. And that's much broader than just their employees and their office, which, you know, frankly, when I contacted the governor's office, I just expected a no comment. But they have full tilt defended the Altmans and raised questions about our coverage of this issue.
That's almost scary to me. I mean, I guess I'm not that surprised, but man, that's I mean, they always criticize another politician at the national level for going after the press, but they don't have any problem doing that themselves. That's pretty disturbing. Well, that means it's a great story, and you know, I've told you that many times. That's exactly what it means, Chris.
Well, I appreciate your coverage of it, and we're going to stay on it, of course, and I imagine that maybe we'll be talking about this in the future as we sort through more tips about a regional coalition for housing, Arch.
Yeah, so I reached out to Jay Inslee's chief of staff, who Chris Ingalls mentioned in our interview yesterday, David Postman, and I know David a little bit. I like him. He used to be a political reporter for the Seattle Times. He should understand, and he does understand, journalism, but now he's Inslee's chief of staff. So I'm going to just share with you the email exchange that I had with Jay Inslee's chief of staff this morning. I wrote, "Hey, David, hope all is well. I've had Chris Ingalls on my show a couple times in the last week. He told me that you have some concerns with the Altman condo story, and I want to make sure I'm not missing anything as I share Chris's story and coverage with my listeners. Would you be available for a quick interview today so I can make sure I have as well-rounded a presentation of this topic as possible? Because all I have to go on is what Chris has reported and told me in the interviews. If there are some legitimate concerns from your office, I would be happy to share that with my listeners." Because, as you know, I am obsessed with fairness. And so just before we went on the air, 7 minutes before noon, I got a response from Jay Inslee's chief of staff, David Postman, and I'll just share it with you. "Dory, my concerns are about Chris's reporting techniques. I have not engaged in a debate with him on the substance of the story. I objected to King 5 publishing a Republican press release verbatim in the body of a news story and for using the Republican quotes with no effort to fact check anything." Well, I would say, Chris's reporting was pretty thorough. He had so many documents. He'd seen the contract, and he went and talked to the woman who was at the center of this story. So I don't think you can say that Chris Ingalls made no effort to fact check anything. This was an extent. And by the way, they gave him in TV news, I think he had about 8 minutes to tell this story, which is unheard of in local TV news. King did a good job giving him more time than you will usually ever see for a story. But it's because it was so extensively reported and it's such an important story. But anyway, back to the response from Governor Inslee's chief of staff. No effort to fact check anything. The press release even misrepresented King 5's own reporting, so it seemed particularly strange that they would give the press release so much coverage. Strange, except that it did include much praise of King 5. King 5 says reprinting press releases is legit political reporting. I also objected to the ambush interview of one of the subjects of the story. That technique should be reserved for public officials who repeatedly refuse to sit for an interview, not to create some faux drama for the cameras. Chris also videotaped the woman earlier without her knowledge before even asking for an interview. Nothing's illegal there. She's a government employee. She was on public property. When he walked up to her, he immediately identified who he was. He wasn't, the camera's out, the microphone's out, and he immediately introduced himself.
Hi, Ms. Altman. We're from the King 5 investigators. How is it that you and your husband...
So he identified himself, and then he asked legitimate questions of her. David Postman, in his response to me, which he CC'd Chris Ingalls, he said, that's just not good journalism, and I let Chris know that. He hasn't responded to me at all, though his editor has... He's gone on the air to cherry-pick my note to King 5, which prompted a few viewers to get in touch with me and accuse me of being anti-American, among other things. But King 5 hasn't shown any interest in a sincere conversation about the reporting techniques, and I don't see any value of coming on the air. Well, if your concern is that you say they don't want a sincere conversation, here I am. I want to talk with you. I want to have a sincere conversation. He said, thanks for the invite, but I'm not making an effort to defend anyone, despite Chris's claims on the air yesterday. I just want to push back on what I think is poor journalistic practices. And Dory, you know this isn't the first time I've done something like that. Thanks for the invite, but I will pass. I think Chris's reporting was fantastic on that story. And I think it is an incredibly important story. If we have connected people in the governor's office who are somehow able to rip off the taxpayers. Taxpayers are spending $50 million for just this one low-income housing program. And multiply that. We're spending $1 billion in Seattle and King County on low-income housing and homelessness a year. And this is why I tell you all the time that that's money poorly spent. Because we're not helping people get off the streets. We're not helping people turn their lives around. We're helping connected government insiders get wealthy. And I think this story, that's why it's such a great story. It illustrates so much of what I tell you day after day is going on with your money, your tax dollars. And so I will keep the invitation open to the governor's office. I, again, thank Chris Ingalls. You should watch his whole story. He's had a couple of them up now. They're at king5.com. I appreciate him sharing it with me and you. And we'll stay on because there's important stuff, and it illustrates why government around here is absolutely out of control. And I still want to know, Jay Inslee, your chief education policy advisor, if this was a ripoff of the taxpayers, are you going to fire the man? That is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
And then you have what's going on all around our region. A business owner tries to extend an act of kindness to one of those people on the streets who wandered in. And she's physically assaulted as a result. She will share her story with you and me next on The Dory Monson Show. One of the things we've been talking about an awful lot is that the drug vagrants in our region, they're getting a lot more brazen because there is depolicing going on. And the Seattle cops, with no support from the city council or from the mayor's office, they are just getting crucified when they do their police work all too often. And so what we're seeing is depolicing. Things they normally would have stopped and intervened on, they now will just keep driving by. And every department in the region knows what's going on in Seattle. But when that happens, the criminals get more and more brazen. And what happened down in Pioneer Square a few days ago at an art gallery there is an example of the brazenness of these criminals on the street. Let me welcome the owner of the Foster White Gallery in Pioneer Square, Fen Wong, who joins us here on Cairo Radio. Fen, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you for having me, Dory.
Walk me through what happened with this guy at your gallery a few days ago.
He came in, demanding a glass of water, which we provided to him. But, you know, he was one of those people that comes through the door where the backs of your neck get this funny feeling.
Yeah.
And we thought, not so comfortable with him. So we kept our eyes on him. And then he began acting aggressively.
Let me interrupt for a second. When you say he came in, I mean, it's an interesting choice of words. He came in demanding a glass of water. Tell me about that. Just how did he demand it?
Well, some people come in here cautiously. They're concerned that coming into a gallery, maybe they're not allowed. Maybe they have to be invited. Well, that wasn't his approach at all. He waltzed in here, and he came up to the desk and said, "Do you have water here?"
Mm-hmm.
So I got him some water.
Okay.
I mean, no problem.
Yeah.
Water is life, right?
You give
it to whomever it is that asks for it.
Sure. Okay, so you do an act of kindness for this guy, and then what happens after that?
Well, so then he started acting out. He was wanting the attention. He enjoyed being watched, and so he was messing with the books that we have to provide information, and then was rearranging our giveaway cards and our business cards. So at that point, I asked him to leave. And he slapping across the face open-handed, and that was really alarming. But I put a rolling chair between us and moved towards the exit, continuing to tell him to leave.
Yeah.
And my coworker called the police while this was happening. But unfortunately, by the front door was an umbrella stand, and he took the umbrella and swung at me with it. So it hit me in the backs of my forearms.
Oh, my goodness.
As I crossed them over my head to protect myself. And then as I guess I must have been a little overwhelmed by it, and I bent over, and he whacked me across the back of the head with the same umbrella before I fell back against the glass and hit my head on my own.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Man.
But I don't know that he was on drugs. I don't get that impression. I got the impression that this person, I don't even know if he was housed or unhoused.
Yeah.
I just got the impression that he was really angry, looking for a fight, and looking for someone who was vulnerable, you know, not as strong as him, not as big as him, and not expecting it.
How old a guy was this?
Oh, it's fully a guess, but maybe 35 to 45.
Okay.
So, yeah, not that old.
So when you asked, I mean, the initial physical assault, you asked him to leave, and was there anything that preceded him slapping you across the face?
There wasn't a verbal warning. It's just his agitated behavior could be construed as a warning.
Yeah,
He wasn't acting normal.
Had you seen this guy before?
I'm afraid I'm a little face blind, so I'm not certain, but it felt as if maybe he'd been in the gallery a couple times before.
Okay. This is becoming a real epidemic in Pioneer Square. And, you know,
I wouldn't categorize it as a problem for Pioneer Square. I think it's a problem all throughout Seattle.
Well,
And I wonder about the country, frankly.
I agree with you. I guess I cite Pioneer Square because in my lifetime, Fen, I've seen the evolution. And when I was a little kid, Pioneer Square was Skid Row. I mean, that's what everybody called it, and it was filled with, at the time we called them bums. And then there was this gentrification when the stadiums went in and restaurants went in, and galleries like yours have been mainstays, and it had become a very beautiful, gentrified neighborhood that was a vital part of our city. And I see these sidewalks that are completely closed down on one side of the street because they're filled with the tents, and it's coming full circle to what it was when I was a little kid. And you are correct that it's certainly not unique to Pioneer Square, that it's not unique to Seattle. This is a region-wide problem.
I think it is a region-wide problem. I believe that some of us have a quieter voice than others in the city. So when tents were popping up around the Key Arena, they were dissipated quite quickly. Whereas down here, we're not heard in the same way. There are considerably more social services here, and it would seem that there's a complacency by all Seattleites to allow a ghettoization of any area,
yeah,
be it Pioneer Square or maybe areas around public spaces,
sure,
that should be better protected.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Physically, are you okay after?
Thank you. I'm all right.
Yeah.
A little bruised and sore, but I'll get over it. Yeah.
How about emotionally? I mean, what does this do to you?
I'm angry.
Yeah.
I'm angry. I've been here 16 years, part of the community intentionally, trying to make things better. I'm pretty open. We have a lot of people come to visit us in a day, and they come from all walks of life, and they are welcome here. And many people find solace, whether they can afford artwork or not, just in the looking, in viewing beautiful things,
yeah,
finding a calm, quiet, and welcoming place in their life. We're happy to be part of that in our community. But what makes me angry is that all of us also need to be vigilant, and that means protecting our basic human right to an ability to thrive, a place that fosters well-being. We are a very wealthy society in a first world country,
mm-hmm,
that has endless resources, and we're not making certain that those resources are allocated correctly.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a lack of money. I do think it's a lack of leadership. We spend more per capita on homelessness than any city in the United States, and only to see the problem getting worse. And so that points to me, at least, to a lack of leadership. And I know what's happening with the cops, and I think that business owners, job creators, taxpayers like yourself deserve to feel safe in your job and in your workplace. And it makes me very sad that that's not happening in our city.
Yeah, well, I agree with you across the board there. On the other hand, it is absolutely all of our responsibilities to hold our leadership to account.
Yes.
And they're the ones that are to be working for us versus us being, again, complacent.
Yeah.
To whatever their current political machinations are, you know,
yeah,
are in favor. We need them to pay attention to the greater good. The majority of us, 98% of us probably, are law-abiding citizens, whether we're housed or not.
Yep.
Whether we're housed or homeless, we're all of us trying to make life better for ourselves and those around us. And it's very few who are making, you know, the whole pot bitter.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
I fully agree with you. It's very well said. Well, Fenn, I enjoyed talking with you. I'm sorry that that this happened, but I love your gallery. I'm one of those people who's walked through many, many times. And
thanks.
And I wish you the very best, and I hope that we start moving things in the right direction in this city.
You know, I just realized, Dory, there's one last thing I need to tell you.
Okay.
And that is that I've been promised, actually, more community policing, and that we have been getting really good responses of late. So it's not unheard of that things can be turned around quickly.
Yep.
Thank you, Dory.
I agree with you. Fenn, thanks for talking with me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. You're welcome. Have a good day.
Fenn Wong, owner of the Foster White Gallery there in Pioneer Square. You have comments, thoughts? Share them with me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on The Dory Monson Show. One of the things that Democrats love to do is they promise all the free stuff you're going to get, and then they have to pay for it. Now, both parties are guilty of this, as evidenced by the fact that we have runaway debt in our country. Man, we need a balanced budget amendment. We need that so desperately in America. States have it. You know, you have to balance the budget at the state level. But nationally, we don't have that. And so they promise and promise. And so, you know, Obama said that George W. Bush was unpatriotic because the national debt went from about $4 trillion to $9 trillion under Bush, which was horrible. That was my biggest criticism of Bush. Then Obama proved himself to be really unpatriotic because the debt, by his own definition, because the debt went from $9 trillion to about $20 trillion. And now Trump has blown it up. We're closing in on $22 trillion in a screaming good economy. And we've got to start reducing our nation's debt. But I thought this was funny. Christine Hallquist is the Democratic governor candidate in Vermont. And even MSNBC is getting tired. MSNBC is getting tired of all these promises without, and this is, she's a history-making transgender candidate for governor in Vermont. But she's promising all these things with no idea how to pay for any of it.
As the governor of Vermont, how do you plan on paying for it?
Well, you should know that's the Republican rhetoric as well.
No, it's a question. It costs a lot of money.
Hang on. Let me answer your question. Let me answer your question. Connecting every home and business with fiber on the plan that I have actually costs less than the way it's done today. Your infrastructure costs are actually built into your bill. I have a plan that's going to cost less than today.
Okay, and that's what they always say is, well, it's going to save us money. Well, how and when is it going to save money? Because you have to spend more, way more, billions more to do all of these things.
When it comes to Medicare for All, we're all paying for that. We're paying 18 cents of every gross domestic product dollar on health care. And the European countries spend 8 to 9 cents and cover everybody.
But you have to spend more. It's so painful to listen to these politicians.
We are already paying the most expensive health care
costs in the nation. I got to scroll forward here.
In Vermont, we spend 31 cents of every health care dollar on administration costs.
No answers.
Medicare is 5 cents.
No answers.
But on all of your proposals, I see increase in spending. Where are you going to have the funds? And that's not Republican rhetoric. As a governor, you have to balance a budget. So how are you going to provide all of the services, whether it's in education or the economy, all the growth things that you talk about?
Good question.
How will you fund it without raising taxes? Or will you raise taxes?
Let me also point out that the Republican agenda to get to private schooling is more expensive. Everything the Republicans are proposing is more expensive.
Wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be refreshing if you just had a politician who could give a straight answer? And the answer is always, we're going to massively raise taxes on the people. That's how we're going to pay for all the things we promise. And it's like the bogus free community college in Seattle. It's not free. It's costing the taxpayers a fortune. The free Orca cards for the high school kids. It's not free. The taxpayers are paying for other people's kids. We just need a little refreshing honesty. And yes, at the national level, both parties are guilty of blowing up our debt in our nation. And it's a huge threat to our future. And the Fastest 15 is next.